G'day and welcome to another episode of the Luke's Lowdown podcast. We are here today with someone who I have so much in common and I love chatting with him. And unfortunately, we haven't been able to have a face-to-face conversation, but we have had a few online. It's Brian Keane from Brian Keane's Fitness. What he does is he transforms bodies and minds from online programs to his amazing Brian Keane Fitness podcast alongside several other podcasts. He's also written several books and also bestsellers as well. But the reason why I wanted to get him on today is, although if you follow him online and you know who I'm talking about, you may not know that he's also a pretty badass endurance athlete. Brian Keane, how you doing, mate?
Luke, I'm awesome, mate. I can't wait for that one-to-one meeting face-to-face. Like, because I follow your content, I think you're following mine. We're having chats. I'm like, how have we not met face-to-face? After a COVID world, mate, we're going to make that happen for sure. But yeah, looking forward to chatting today.
Yeah, fantastic. So you are over in Ireland and I'm in London. So we are doing this virtually at the moment. So I just want to do a quick recap before we dive into it, as we both sort of have a background in team sports. You played Gaelic football. I played football. And then we both dove into the health and fitness world from different angles to start with. And now you have completed some of the world's toughest ultra marathons. So I want to sort of wrap my head around it, that you went from playing Gaelic football to bodybuilding to health and fitness. Why did you want to do an ultra marathon?
It's interesting because we have very similar backstories up until a point, because even before you were on my podcast, I'd heard you on several podcasts. Like when I was preparing for Marathon to Saab, when you put in Marathon to Saab, you come up on a load of the list. So like way before we knew each other in real life, I was like, I felt like I knew you because I'd been listening to podcasts. And I kind of fell into ultra running off the back of other things that I was doing. So as you said there, I played team sports for most of my life, Gaelic football. You know, most people in the UK are familiar with that. People outside of the UK, it's like Aussie rules, very, very similar to Australians rules football, apart from take away the tackles. And I played that for a long period of my life and transitioned out of that. I had a couple of knee injuries. It was one of the things that I was starting to kind of fall out of love with. It was a lot of commitment, particularly playing at club level. And I just transitioned out and needed a change. So I went into the world of bodybuilding then. And I'd always lifted weights from a very young age. From, you know, age 13, I started lifting weights in my bedroom. So I was always into that side of things. And when I turned 26, I'm 34 now. When I turned 26, I said, well, I want to do a bodybuilding show. I'm like, that's something I'd love to do. Like, I grew up idolizing Arnold Schwarzenegger. I was like, I'd love to do a bodybuilding show. So I started to prepare for one. Now, I went down the kind of bodybuilding fitness modeling route. So I traveled around a lot doing shows, doing photo shoots, etc. And I did quite decent in that world. Like, I won my pro card in November 2014, which just means you can compete for money. And I finished eighth at the Worlds in Las Vegas in 2015. So I did okay in that world, in that space. But it was very all consuming for me, because it's constant. Like, the difference between bodybuilding and endurance is, endurance is all consuming in the sense that it takes a lot of time to train, but bodybuilding is all about the diet side of things. Like, you're just on nutrition all of the time. And my daughter was born in 2015 and I was preparing for the world in Vegas at that time. And I remember thinking when she was born, I'm like, I'm not doing this anymore. I was like, I can't, I'm so focused on my body composition, how I look, how much muscle I'm putting on, my diet, everything was down to a gram. I was like, I'm going to be a crap dad if I keep living like this. Cause you're walking around like a brain dead zombie half the year, cause you're so depleted and your body fat's so low. So I came out of that world, decided that I need to switch my focus. So I started putting a lot more effort into my business. You know, my background was as a primary school teacher. I actually lived in London for 4 years working as a teacher. So my background was as a teacher. And then I qualified as a personal trainer. And that was kind of my side hustle for 2 years. But in 2015, after the world, I'm like, well, I'm going to start really putting more focus into my business. It was going well at that time. But I said, the thing that's going to put it to this next level is writing a book. So I wrote my first book, The Fitness Mindset, which did incredibly well, way better, Luke, than I ever expected. You know, 16 weeks on the Amazon bestseller list, sold tens of thousands of copies, and I was just blown away from how well that book did. But that gave me focus in 2016, and it was released in 2017. But then I had this little bit of a lost feeling in 2017, And that was the same time when I went to an event. It was a business mastery event in Amsterdam. It was the Tony Robbins event. Again, Tony splits people, but that business mastery for me was brilliant. I loved it. But I met someone over there who became a very good friend of mine. His name is Tom Otten. And he was telling me about this race in the Sahara Desert that you run 6 back-to-back marathons and you need to have a venom pump within arm's reach in case you get bitten by a snake, and it's self-sufficient. And I was like, holy fuck, that sounds mental. So I actually went back. There was a speaker on stage talking about something to do with marketing, and I was on my phone for that next hour Googling Marathon de Saab, Googling MDS. I was like, oh my God. I was like, that sounds class. Like, again, this shows you the kind of things that excite people. I know you're in the same bracket. But then I came home and I thought, I'd love to do that. But I kind of bottled it a bit. I'm like, okay, actually, do you know what? I'm not a runner. Like, at the time, I was 85 kilos. I'm 5'8". I'm not that far off that now. I'm still 83 kilos. But I was 85 kilos, built like a hobbit. Like, I'm built like a short arm, stocky muscle, like not built to run. And I was like, I'm not going to do that. I was like, I can't even, I've never ran a marathon. I was like, don't mind running 6 through the Sahara. But then I was putting up a post onto Instagram, and I had a decent following on Instagram at the time. And it was some generic quote, like, you know, behind every fear is a person you want to be, or some generic thing like that. I was doing those quote cards, you know, a couple of times a week. And I was like, you fucking hypocrite. I'm like, you're about to post this up. And I was like, and you're literally aren't going to do this race in the Sahara because you think it's, you're too afraid of it. And that was kind of my wake up call. So I said, fuck it. So I signed up. Literally that day, I paid my first deposit for it. And Luke went to the gym. This was 2017, August 2017. And no word of a lie, I have this in the new book that's out in January. I did my normal workout, which was a push workout. So I was doing shoulders, chest, triceps, etc. And I was like, okay, I'm going to hop on the treadmill and I'm going to run. And I hadn't ran as a bodybuilder. I did a lot of cross trainer, a little bit on the rower, but I hadn't ran since I played football. And I also was a sprinter. Like, I was good at sprinting because Gaelic football is very sprint based. But I was like, I'll do 2K. I nearly got sick. I hopped off the treadmill and I was in that curled over fetal position where I'm like, I'm going to throw up. I'm going to get sick. I was like, I'm actually going to get sick. And I sat in the dressing room and I'm like, oh my God, what the fuck am I after signing up for? I was like, 6 back-to-back marathons is 250 kilometers. I feel sick after 2. Now, also at the time, I did something really stupid that non-runners will get and runners might get if they remember back. I set the treadmill to like 16 kilometers an hour on like the 3 incline. So like I went from 0 to flat out because I didn't know what was fast and what was slow. So it made sense why I was so sick. But I broke it down into kind of a pyramid of prioritization where I'm like, well, look, I need to focus on running a marathon. I'm like, there's no point getting stressed out about 6 if I can't run 1. So I put all of my focus and energy into completing 1. So I signed up to the Dubai Marathon in January 2018, which was my first ever marathon, my first ever road marathon, and first ever marathon ever going that distance, anything over 20K. And I decided to start training towards that and focus towards that. Now, it's funny because fitness people will get this. I know, Luke, you had something similar. There's a flick of a switch that happens when you're training with endurance, where it goes from being really, really hard to not being really, really hard. And what I mean by that is I went from 2 kilometers every week to 3, then 3 to 4 at the end of workouts, 4 to 5. And then I went from 5 kilometers at the end of every workout to 10. And then I went from 10 kilometers to 20. And there was this quantum leap where your fitness just jumped. Now, that won't happen to everybody, but it happened to me. And it's one of the things that is very interesting when it comes to kind of fitness and your switch being flipped. But I ran the Dubai Marathon. I put a weighted backpack on. I wore a hoodie and I ran it and did okay. Felt quite confident after it. And then several months later in April, ran the Marathon de Saab shuffles the Marathon de Saab. Like, you could say maybe run for the first day. The rest of it was kind of a shuffle more than a fucking run, but I did it and completed it. And I won't say I was hooked after, but what happened to me was I had this massive wave of, oh my God, where else am I holding limitations in my life? I never believed this possible. I was like, I literally, in my mind, was a non-runner. Like, I told people on social media I was doing it, but I had to block out a lot of noise because people were like, that's insane. You're going to die. And part of me was like, fuck, maybe they're right. Like, I was like, I'm not a runner. It's the Sahara. There's bad stuff that can go wrong. And I did it and completed it and got to the finish line. I just remember thinking, going, I can't believe I did this. Like, I can't believe I finished this. Now, that doesn't happen with everybody. It happened to me because it was the first thing. It was my first ever ultra. It was my first ever doing anything more than a marathon. And I did it in the Sahara. And after that, then I just wanted to challenge myself more and more. And that progressed then into, for me, what was the next logical step? So I went from the heat, then I went to the ice ultra, which is in the Arctic. I was like, well, I will go extreme cold. That's logical. Like, you know, but any fucking endurance person gets that. It's like, well, you've done the heat, go and do the cold, you know? So I trained for that, did the ice ultra, the 230 kilometers to the Arctic the following year in February. That was insane on a whole other level. I tore my Achilles 86 kilometers from the end of that race and ran the last, moved the last 86 kilometers on a torn Achilles. They put me out for 6 months when I got home, but gave me a completely new relationship to pain and what I potentially could handle. And then I ran my first 100 miler in the following year in 2020 in Nevada. I did the Jackpot 100. I did really well in that race. I came top 10 in that race, which wasn't my expectation. Like, I was completed. It took me 26 and a half hours. I was like, just get it done. But my body was actually really good up until mile 80. I had a bit of a meltdown in terms of my hips and my knees and everything from mile 80 to 100. But it really got up until mile 80. And ever since then, I've just been kind of messing around in the endurance world, doing things that keeps me motivated. So yeah, that's a very long-winded way to talk about my journey, but that's how I got here.
But that's a really good snapshot now of people understand of where you've come from and also what you've done and also your motivations, because we all have that origin story of ultra endurance for people who don't come from cross country in high school or growing up as kids or runners or parents that are runners and marathon runners. We all have these origin stories of where we come to ultra endurance. So I think everyone's got a really good snapshot of your ultra endurance career and some of the intense races you've done. So my next question is, you're out in the middle of the desert with 900, 1,000 other runners, other athletes, all standing around. I'm going to guess you've got AC/DC's Highway to Hell blaring out over the speakers because, you know, the race organizer for the MDS does that every year. What's going through your mind when Patrick Bauer is on the mic saying, okay, this is the song, this is it, and you're about to head off in 1 minute's time?
Ooh. What's going through my head? Keep moving. I think every ultra endurance athlete has that at some point. It's keep moving, you know, and you focus on putting one foot in front of the other and you just keep doing that. I'm just going to make sure my mic is connected here. Good. Yeah, that was it. Like, and that was, to be honest, Luke, for the entire duration, it was just keep moving, keep putting one foot in front of the other in whatever speed you can. Like, you know, it, with Marathon de Saab and those multi-day, now looking back in hindsight, they're very much about pacing yourself. Now that sounds really obvious, but if you're someone who comes from a sporting background, you tend to blow your load a little bit quicker than normal because that's your, you know, that's what you do. Like, you know, you go balls to the wall for 60 minutes, 90 minutes, 70 minutes based on your sport. And I had to kind of flip my mindset in the Sahara to, you can't do what you do for everything else. You know, I've been an athlete. I did CrossFit when I was in London. I was bodybuilding competitively where I was training with weights, but you're not doing something like this. And I had to just remind myself, slow down and just get this done, complete this and focus on getting today right. You know, it's a metaphor for everything you do in life. Like Marathon de Saab basically is a representation of how you can run your life. Focus on what you can do today, your food, your nutrition, your foot care, etc., that helps you get to the next day. And you're constantly keeping the end in mind, but you're focusing on the process and what's in front of your face, you know, the 6 inches in front of your face at all times. And at the start line, it was just keep moving forward and just keep putting one foot in front of the other.
I've said this a lot, and my community will know about this, and also my friends will know about this because I go on about this all the time, is I will throw cliches out there about putting one foot in front of the other. It's only a cliche if you don't actually mean and you don't actually apply what you're saying. You know what I mean? So if it's if you just throw something out there, it's like, oh, you know, to achieve your goals, you put one foot in front of the other. It's like if you don't have any intent behind it, when you provide intent behind that, then it's not just a cliche. It actually gives you a structure to build from. And it sounds like your structure, your spine was like, I got to keep moving. So in order to keep moving at the end of each, that's during each day, you've got to pace. At the end of each day, you've got to do your, I shared a tent with a lot of military guys, and it's all about the admin. It's all about the admin. It's all about the admin, you know, your feet, your nutrition, your, all that sort of stuff. So it sounds like your sort of like your spinal element of the MDS was just keep moving. So what was the toughest part of the entire week in the MDS, and how did you, what was the language you used and the conversations you had to keep that mantra of just keep moving when it got really tough?
This is going to sound like such a crap answer for something as hard as MDS. The hardest part was the waiting around the day before the race. And I found, which, and I will explain on that, because MDS is so physically challenging and physically demanding. But when you're moving and you're actually in the process of doing the six back-to-back marathons, you're kind of switching to another zone. For me, the day before, when we were doing nothing but waiting around to run the next day, that's when my fucking head was at me, where I'm like, what are you doing? This is going to be dreadful. You're not going to be able to do this. I was in full-on enemy between my two ears mode. And I found that the most difficult to silence and calm, because once we got moving and got going, especially after the first day, and I'm like, well, I didn't die. I didn't break. I didn't overheat and just self-combust. I'm fine. It was easier to kind of keep that self-talk monitored as I went along. But I found the day before really hard. And also, Luke, before I left, the week before, I found so hard. Like, if you had given me a credible out 4 or 5 days before I was to fly to the Sahara, I would have taken it. Fucking bitten your hand off for it. I was shitting myself. Like, I was like full on, like I put a section of it in my second book, Rewire Your Mindset, the note I wrote to myself where I was just freaking out, like full on, like, I don't want to do this. And I just kept focusing on, well, you have to, you said you were going to, you be accountable, you know, try and distract yourself between now and then. So I found the lead up so much harder mentally, because you'd be surprised, like, you know, this Jesus better than anybody, what your body can do. Now, also, I think your body can do more than most people, like, but in the context of all of us have a physical capability that we can get to when we're pushed and when we don't allow ourselves to back out or quit, whereas mentally you can throw in the towel before you've even started. And that's where I really struggled with. And that's what I really battled with. So although I'd love to be like, it was the long day, you know, the day 4, day 5, where I'm like, oh, I'm fucked and I'm seeing shit left, right and center and I'm hallucinating from lack of sleep, all the things that happened, that wasn't what I struggled with the most. The biggest struggle was the lead up and just trying to get my head right and get my mindset right so that I actually went and did it.
So what was, looking back now, what was, is there one thing or three things that did keep your head within a range of not too negative, not too positive, to make sure that you actually turned up to the start line?
Yeah. And this is going to sound, this isn't to suck your dick on air, but I listened back to podcasts that you had done on MDS, and I listened back to episodes of other people who had ran the MDS and came out the other side. And that put me at ease, because you're listening to people who had done it. That can go two ways. Sometimes it can make you freak out more, but I also was able to put it into perspective. And I'm like, right, these people have cool stories, but they didn't die. I'm like, they didn't die. Like, they wouldn't be doing a podcast now if they were dead. You know, that didn't happen. So I was able to put it into perspective, and that calmed me down quite a lot. You know, if in a lot of my cases, and I think a lot of people are similar, fear is from unknowns and uncertainties. And if you can fill in some of those gaps to make more things known and more things certain on what potentially is going to happen, your fear tends to reduce. So for me, in the lead up to it, it was arming myself with more information. Listening to podcasts, I rang my friend Tom, who had done it previously. And I was like, mate, what do I need to know? I'm fucking freaking out here. And he's like, look, you do X, Y, and Z. So, you know, he's like, focused on the day, one foot in front of the other, look after your feet, the usual stuff. But that kept me calm, because what happens for me, and I think some people are similar, when you're afraid, your brain is running in a million different directions. And with an ultra, there's a million different things to think about. With a multi-day ultra, that compounds by 10 again. Like, so it, I can see how it happens, but you can't focus on all those things or you'll drive yourself crazy. You need to focus on controlling the controllables. What are the things within my control that I can focus on now that will help get me to, at my point, to the start line? Don't mind the finish line. It was get to the start line. And I was just having, again, it's a little bit of self-awareness. Like, by nature, I can bottle things. That's why I love endurance, because it forces you to come face to face with the bottler inside you who tells you you need to quit or this is uncomfortable, and you need to turn around and say, fuck you, I'm doing this. Like, I love endurance, puts you head to head with that and it forces you. So I love it. But also, when you're aware that that's what your default can be, I'm not like that as much now. You do get better at that. Like, now when I have a challenge, I'm like, I'm going to do it. Like, you know, but your confidence doesn't come overnight. The confidence comes from repeatedly keeping promises to yourself and then hitting the goals that you've set for yourself. So I'm in a different point now, having completed MDS and running through the Arctic and 100 miler and other endurance challenges. I have more confidence now. So when a challenge comes, I'm like, all right, cool. And it puts everything into perspective. Like, I ran the marathon in Cork in Clonakilty a couple of weeks ago. And people were asking me, they're like, oh, what are you doing training-wise? And what are you doing nutrition-wise? And what are you doing this? I'm like, the honest answer is nothing. I'm just running and I'm just going to run the marathon. I'm like, it's all relative. I was like, I'm not going to freak out over a marathon because I've ran a fucking 100 miler. Like, I'm not going to freak out over a marathon because I've ran MDS. Whereas to somebody else, that's a big deal. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's totally fine. We all have versions of this, but you get better at handling that. I would freak out with a marathon if you'd asked me at 26, because I'm like, how the fuck do you run 26.2 miles? I'm like, I'm not a car. Like, what the fuck? Like, your legs, my legs aren't going to go 26.2 miles. But that shifts over time, and endurance allows you to build that. So, you know, it was one of those things that everyone that's doing endurance that are listening to this, they know this already. Everything is relative. Everything is about perspective. And for me, getting control of it was trying to fill in some of those unknown gaps and just reduce that fear to where it was at a point where it was manageable and wasn't just all over the place.
Yeah, you touched on it very briefly, like self-awareness. And one of the things that I like to remind myself is to be self-aware when you're going through these things, whether it's leading up to an event or whether it's, you know, when everything's going tits up, so to speak, and everything's going wrong. It's like, okay, I take a step back. I know this is not a good situation. All right, am I going to have a logical response to this, or am I going to have an emotional response to it? And it's a case of neither's right, neither's wrong, but you've got to be able to differentiate, okay, what are my thoughts? Are they logical or are they emotional? And then how am I going to react to the certain situation, scenario, outcome that's been put in front of me? And it sounds like your emotional response before the MDS was like, holy crap, you know, how am I going to do this? Am I going to die? Whatever. But logically, whether it was a conscious thing, I'm going to guess it was, but maybe in a different language in your own, because you went, okay, I'm going to go and talk to others who have done it. I'm going to go and research what other people have done and how they've done it. So it's like, that's the logical side of things, because we get caught up in the emotional side of things so many times. And that's not a bad thing. There's a time and place for that. But I think the main takeaway I'm trying to say here is just acknowledge that there are two sides. Is that something that you've ever done?
Yeah, I think you put it so eloquently there, and I agree completely. There's a time and a place for a logical response, and there's a time and a place for an emotional response. Logically, for me, when I'm in the lead up to a race is when I need my logic, because emotion can run crazy. However, when I'm on a course or in the middle of a run, emotions can be the thing that drives you and fuels you. Because logic, you don't give a fuck about logic when you're 70 miles deep into a 100 miler. You're like, oh, fuck this. This completely sucks dick. Like, if you're thinking logic, that's the logical words you're using. Emotionally, though, you're driving yourself on. You're thinking about why you're doing it. You're thinking about, for me, I think about my daughter. Like, you know, do I want to be someone who's tapped out 70 miles in and be like, well, I didn't do it because it was too hard. Sorry, Holly. Like, you know, when she asked me about it in 10 years time, I'm like, no, I got to the fucking finish line and I finished it. I was like, because I said I was going to do it and I did it. So I check in with those things, because those emotions drive me. They get you energy where there was no energy before. where logic will get you in the lead up to it and potentially help you control those emotions. There's a time and a place for both. And it's just, they're tools, you know, Luke, they're like a hammer. You can use a hammer to hammer in a nail in a wall, or you can hit yourself in the dick with it. Like, the tool isn't the problem, it's how you use it. And I think emotions and logic are the same. It's about how you use them to serve the end purpose of what it is you're looking to do.
Yeah, nailed it, mate. So you move into the Ice Ultra, going from hot to like mildly cold, let's put it, minus 5 to minus 40 degrees Celsius or whatever it is out there, up there. So I'm going to guess, and please correct me if I'm wrong, the lead up to that was very different, and the conversation you were having with your in your head was very different. Is that right? And also, what was the toughest thing about the Ice Ultra?
Weirdly, I went full circle in a negative way right before the Arctic. And I'll tell the story that probably was the reason, it was the seeds of failure planting the tree of future success when it comes to the case of the Arctic. In November, I signed up to run a trail race in Barcelona. It was a 70-kilometer trail race in preparation for the Arctic. And I'm so embarrassed thinking back now. Like, I literally thought I was Billy Big Balls when I was doing that race. I'm like, I ran MDS. I ran to the Sahara. I'm a badass. I can rock up and do 70 kilometers. It's totally fine. And I landed out to Barcelona. One, thinking I'd done no preparation, a little bit of runs, no preparation, because I landed out thinking it was a road race and it was a fucking trail race. Part of it, which was running up Mount Tibidabo to start. And 40 kilometers in, I went the wrong way to the wrong checkpoint from metaphor for life. I was following this fucking hot chick runner in front of me who was on a different course for the group course. And I landed at their checkpoint and I was like, oh my God, such a metaphor for life. Don't chase fucking good looking asses without context. But I landed at this checkpoint and they're like, you're at the wrong checkpoint. You need to go back 10K to the other one. And they're like, you might time out. And I was like, you know what? I'm out of here. I'm like, this is crap. I thought I was running on the road. It was soaked in Barcelona that November. 2018 was the most they had on record in terms of rainfall. And I was like, fuck this. I'm out. I'm like, this is crap. I'm going back to my hotel. So 40 kilometers in, topped out, went back to my hotel and was like, this is only a training race. Doesn't matter. It's a training race. I don't care. I got showered, and this has happened to most ultra runners at some point, or ultra endurance athletes. I got showered, I got fed, I was lying in bed, and I sat there thinking, fuck it. You could have finished that. You should have finished that. What are you doing? And that gave me such a wake-up call, because I got a jolt of lightning of fear that if I prepare like this for the Arctic, I could die in the Arctic, like genuinely. Whatever about the Sahara, the Arctic is the Sahara times 10 in terms of conditioning, because there's so many ways that you could die. Hypothermia, frostbite, getting lost, all of those things. Less likely with getting lost because it's a very well-run race, but hypothermia, frostbite, very, very high risk in the Arctic. So I completely re-channeled my focus. So that was November, December, January, was running the Arctic in February. I went into tunnel vision mode preparing. I was doing 20 minutes in ice baths multiple times a day. I was upping my runs to as far as I could go, flat out speed for 20K. And then I was hopping on a bike to completely fatigue my legs. I was just hell for leather training for that. And I got to the Arctic and I was in definitely the best running physical shape of my life in the lead up to that, 100%. And got out there. And what I found so difficult, I was in a very good headspace. I felt like I had done the work. And my thinking was, if I don't finish this race, it's not through any fault of my own. I was like, I've literally prepared as best. Because the thing is with ultras, you all, and you know this with the race, the crazy mixtures you do, it's never going to be 100% your preparation. There's always going to be something that goes wrong in most cases. But this was as close to 100% as I could get in terms of preparation. And I landed out there. And what made it so difficult was I tore my Achilles. Now, the reason, looking back, my friend Tom Otten, ironically, it's going full circle now, who taught me about MDS, is doing the Ice Ultra in February, and I've been helping him. And I told him the one thing that I didn't do in preparation, because I'm in Ireland, the west of Ireland, is I couldn't prepare with my snowshoes. So the first time I ran properly in snowshoes was in the Arctic, and it completely threw off my gait for running. And I was making really good time, doing really, really well in those conditions, but it just kept niggling. My Achilles was going from under me, and I could feel it getting weaker and weaker. It just didn't feel right. And then it went. And when it went, it was like, oh my God, for anyone that's torn their Achilles, like it literally feels like someone's stabbing you with a knife every time you take a step. And I got to one of the tents. So the local indigenous tribe, the Sami tribe out there, set up tents where they boil water for people and they give it to the runners as you're going through, because obviously you can get up to, you know, minus 38 was the lowest it got when I was there. And the water freezes. So they would give you the water, and they have medics and everything there. It's a brilliantly ran race, beyond the ultimate to do it. And I was talking to one of the medics, and she's like, look, your Achilles is torn. If you keep going, it could rupture. And she's like, if it ruptures, you're out of here on a helicopter. And I remember sitting there thinking, and my friend Simon, who did it with me, he also ran MDS with me. He was like, well, you're gone. He was like, I'll finish it. And I was like, I'm not fucking gone. I was like, I'm gone when the helicopter comes. I was like, we're going to keep going. So I did. And the pain didn't get any easier. You know, it didn't. Like, I'd be lying if I said it did, but I was able to move quicker. The hardest point of the Ice Ultra was probably from 80 to 90 kilometers toward the end, when my Achilles tore first, because when it went, it was like someone shot me with a gun, and the pain was so severe that it slowed me down to a crawl. And you're in this, in the Arctic, you need to be in this kind of Goldilocks zone. If you go too fast, you sweat and your risk of hypothermia goes up. You go too slow, your risk of frostbite goes up because you're not moving quick enough. So you're constantly trying to be like Goldilocks in the porridge, in that speed in place in between. And when I slowed to a crawl, my eyelids froze over, because obviously you've got water in your eyelids, and they froze over. So I couldn't blink. And that hurt like a bitch. Fuck, my eyes were like bloodshot when I went into the tent, because I hadn't, until I was able to get hot water to put over them, I wasn't able to blink. So that was just like, between that and my Achilles, I was just in so much pain. But that was the hardest part. But it wasn't like MDS. MDS, there was so much uncertainty. I didn't have the confidence myself. And until I crossed the finish line in the Sahara, I wasn't fully sure I was going to be able to finish it. Whereas it happened in the Arctic, I knew that I was, unless my leg fell off me, I was going to finish the Arctic race. I was going to get to the end. Now, if my Achilles ruptured and I had to be taken on a helicopter, so be it. I was confident that the race was organized well enough that if there was a medical emergency, I would have been fine. Now, you're in this zone, like, as well. Like, I'm not a fucking, I don't have a death wish, you know, like no more than you, Luke, with the crazy things you do. But you go into this space in this zone where you're just like, I'm finishing this. I'm doing this. I'm completing this. You know this better than anybody. And that's where I was at. That's where my head was at. So in terms of the most difficult part, it was when my Achilles tore first. But then I started to pick up speed. I took some painkillers. You know, I never take painkillers. So when I take them, they work really, really well. And they did. They allowed me to kind of move a little bit quicker, enough that I could up my core temperature so that I wasn't having freezing over eyeballs and eyelids. And I got to the end. I finished it. Now, it was amazing getting to the end line. I was out for 6 months when I got home, 3 months, and then I relapsed because I did something stupid trying to do a box jump and relapsed the whole frigging thing. But that was my own fault. But 6 months until I was back running properly again. But an amazing experience. I wouldn't do it again. I wouldn't go to the Arctic again. I would do the Sahara in the morning. I wouldn't do it because it's so expensive, but I'd do it if, you know, it was free or someone sponsored it or whatever. I would do it because the experience was great. I wouldn't do the Arctic. The Arctic feels like you're fighting Mother Nature. And I'm like, right, I got out of that one. I think it's 1-0 to me, but I wouldn't fancy taking her on in a rematch because I think I got lucky on that one.
You could argue that one of the most simplest things that we all tell other ultra endurance athletes who start their first, you know, endurance race is nothing new on race day. And you broke the cardinal rule that potentially set you up to go down that path. And that's some free advice.
Yeah. Again, it's It's so obvious when I say it, and I've given that advice to so many people, but just failed to take it that day because I was in this kind of illusion of I'm just not going to use them. Like I was like, I just won't use them. It'll be fine. And then you try not to use them and you're fucking sinking in snow. And I'm like, oh shit, I actually do need to use these. Like, so it was one of those that I was there in my own head. I'm like, oh yeah, I know I haven't trained with them. Nothing new. I'll bring them. I'll hook them to my bag, but I'm not going to use them. But then like when you start sinking every time you move, you're like, oh crap, I have to. So yeah, that's good advice. Whether that's supplementation or fucking food or shoes or whatever it is, like, you know, ice runners or whatever, your snowshoes, it's good advice across the board.
Yeah, nothing new at race day. I've got two final things because I want to be mindful of your time. I've got two final things I want to touch on. So you've done some super extreme multi-day events. Then you go and tackle a 100-mile race, which is a completely different beast. You touched on that at mile 80, 85 was just like, okay, everything's just like going haywire now and I've just got to get this done. So I want to dive into, and this is a leading question into my next one about your mindset book, but I want to dive into what were the tools that you used leading up to the 100-mile race, because it's a completely different beast. And then also when everything went haywire in that mile 80, 85 mark.
It's a really good question. And the answer was, I found it easier for sure, the 100-mile prep than the first two. Now, I think if you'd reverse the order, my answer would be the same in terms of the reverse order. I think when you've done MDS and Arctic, the Arctic or equivalent races, and then you tackle a 100-miler, you're just in a better position. You just feel more confident. You trust your body, which is something that I didn't do or have for those races. Like when I did MDS, I didn't know if my body would finish it. I just like, cause we love to say we can override our body, and that's so true to a point, but there also is a point where your body just won't go. It just won't move and won't go. You know this from the crazy challenges. And I didn't know that. Whereas when I did the 100-miler, I knew I'd be fine. I knew I'd be able to get there and do it. And I surprised myself with how well I did up until mile 80. Now, my speed, just to give context, the Jackpot 100, one of my Achilles heels, pardon the pun based on tearing my Achilles, one of my Achilles heels has always been navigation. So I did a 100-miler that was a 2.2-mile loop 50 times, or two-mile loop. So I was like, well, I won't get lost. I'm like, if I get lost in 2 miles, I deserve to be fucking out in the middle of nowhere. Like, so I was fine with that. So I wasn't worried about something that would normally cause me a lot of stress, because I've got shock in navigation. Like, I can get lost from my sitting room to the kitchen. Like, it's so bad that on a race, like, I've got lost in every ultra I've ever done. Hence the Barcelona story, when I didn't have Simon beside me, who's brilliant at navigation. So I did that, chose that race based on that, because I wanted to see, could my body crack 100 milers? Now, I fell below my target because I wanted to hit it in 24 hours, where it took me 26 and a half. And I was on course up until mile 80 to smash that. Like, I was well below the 24 hours at mile 80. But I think it was a combination of never having gone that distance where my body just, and it was like a finger click where everything just broke. And one of the benefits I have of, I grew up on a farm, so I have quite a lot of natural strength, a farmer build, but because I did a lot of S&C playing football, bodybuilding, I'm quite physically strong. And I do a lot of weights and strength work. So my running form on ultras doesn't normally break down. Whereas you see people who jump forward in kind of a kyphotic state, roll forward, and then everything starts to go, hips and everything, because their core's too weak, etc. That normally doesn't happen to me. But on mile 80, I didn't have this gradual decline where I'd get curled over and my form was gone. It's just that everything went. So my hips, my knees, my ankles, everything was just so sore, and I was moving, but it was a shuffle, kind of like that Sahara shuffle. So it slowed me right down. Like, I'd say I didn't get my time splits, but I'd say my mile 1 to 50 was considerably faster than my mile 85 to 100 because of the how much it slowed me down. And I think it was just not having the miles in my legs. I think because I'd never done a 100-miler in one go. I just think, because I think if I did it again, I'd crack through 24 hours because my body's been there. You have a little bit of, you know, in bodybuilding, they call it muscle memory. You know, it's the same runners. You're putting the miles into your legs. So I think that was one of the reasons it broke down so much. And it's interesting because 100 miles is a long way. Like it's a long way. There's no way to break it down. It's a long distance. But it was definitely easier than the other races because my internal self-talk all the way through was, this is going to be over in 24 hours, just over in my case, 26 hours. I'm like, it's going to be done. I'm like, I'm going to have it finished. There's no more worrying about it and it'll be done. Like this time after I got through, say, mile 10, I was like, well, I'm literally going to be doing this for maybe 20 more hours, 24 more hours max, and then I'm done. And then I can chill. You know, I had my daughter with me. My mom was with me. We were staying in Vegas. I traveled out to Nevada for the race or out to the desert for the race. And that was it. I just kept focusing on that. And I didn't have any, there was no point on the 100 miler where I was going to stop. None. Like up until mile 80, I thought I was fucking flying. Like I was flying it. I'm like, oh, I'm Superman. Like, you know, and then fucking universe is like, no, you're not, mate. Here's your body breaking down. Like, so I had that. But no, I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the 100 miler. I don't know if I'd do it again. I would like to try and crack 24 hours, but there's just so much training time preparation. Like, ultra, one thing I learned about ultra, I'm not sure if you were the same, Luke, but to complete an ultra or to complete MDS, maybe the Arctic to a lesser degree, but to complete 100 miler, 50 miler, an ultra, most of it's in your head. Most of it's mindset based. If you can get your head right, you can finish it. To do it quickly, you need to get your body right. They're two different games. And as I do more races and experience more ultras, I realize that the cost and trade-off of focusing on the training element and really getting that dialed in, something you've mastered, is not necessarily worth the trade-off for me. And to knock that 24 hours off, it's not that it would take that much more training, but it eats into your day. And when you have other things going on, I struggle to prioritize it sometimes. So it's an interesting one. And if you'd asked me 6 months after, I'm like, I would 100% do it again. I would like do it again in the morning. I'd love to do a 100 miler and do the same race if I can, because I know it, I'm confident. But then as more time, COVID hit, other things hit, and it made me kind of just, like most people, you shift priorities into other things. And you're like, do I really want to do 4 or 5 hours of training every day? You know, I have other things I'd like to do, books I'd like to write, spend the time with my daughter, my partner, etc. So things change. But yeah, it was an interesting one. But I enjoyed that. Like definitely more than MDS and the Arctic, where they were more achievements. The 100 miler, I didn't feel an achievement at the end. I didn't get any massive personal growth or relationship change with pain like the Arctic. I was just like, oh, that was kind of cool. And I thought I'd be, you know, in bits for a month after it. I was back training on the Wednesday, finished on the Sunday, slept the Sunday, was a bit stiff on Monday, a bit sore on Tuesday, and then I was back training on Wednesday. So my body bounced back quite quickly from it. But yeah, it was an enjoyable one.
But as you said, like in ultra endurance and endurance sports, there's a huge element that is the mental side of things. If you just want to finish it, if you just want to complete it, like most people, mm-hmm. like us, right? So in knowing that, like I've wanted to ask you this question for a while. What was your inspiration to write your second book, Rewire Your Mindset? Because as you said, you wrote The Fitness Mindset, which was a massive bestseller. And then the next book came out, Rewire Your Mindset. What was your inspiration and what did, like, why did you feel like that was the next book for you to write?
That's my love letter to my daughter. If anything ever happened to me, that book, that's the book. Sense.
Yeah.
That's it summed up. It's literally, if anything ever happened to me, this is the handbook or guidebook. And I think that's why that book has had so much impact on people. It's something that I could give her, or someone could give her. And I'm like, here's how you think, here's how to get your life right, your mindset right, so that you can have the life you want. It's a love letter to my daughter.
Mate, that's very eloquently put. And yeah, I never knew that. Obviously I've known your background. I know what you've done, but it makes total sense. Is a, you know, it's a way of thinking in life to achieve your goals. And it's absolutely fantastic. So I want to be mindful of your time. I know you've got something else coming up. When this comes out, your new book, The Keen Edge, will be out already. So super excited for that. You've got 3 books what time this is out. Mate, what is it that you like about writing books?
they're all different. My first book I wrote from a business standpoint to try and separate myself from, I was getting lobbed into kind of a fitness influencer bracket in 2017. And I didn't really want to be in that category. I was a coach. I was a trainer. So the book, first book, The Fitness Mindset, was to separate me from that. The second one, as I said, was The Love Letter to My Daughter. And the third one was, I've repeatedly said so much about fat loss and nutrition to people that it's great working with me, but I can't work with people all the time because I cap my programs, you know, very similar to you when you're coaching. I saw that on your Instagram. I cap the amount of people I work with. So I wanted to have a resource for people that I could give them. So the new book, The Keen Edge, is all about that. So I write different books based on different stages of my life, different reasons for them. So I'm also running and writing are very similar for me because I love podcasts. I love chats like this, Luke, or when you were on my podcast, I love videos and communicating that way. I don't love writing, but I love having written. And I'm the same with running. I don't love running, but I love having ran. And those two things together, once they're done, I feel better for having done them. And I just remind myself of that when I'm in the process.
Fantastic. What a great way to finish as well. You know, the thing that you get out of accomplishing a task and being able to look back and go, wow, that was a journey. I had to push through some tough times, but the lessons that you learned is, you know, priceless. I want to say massive, massive thanks, Brian, for coming on the Luke's Lie Down podcast and sharing some wisdom, some good laughs, some stories, and a little bit of insight into everything that you do. Mate, you're pretty easy to find online, but give everyone some guidance. Where would you love them to go?
I would love people to go and listen to your episode on my podcast. I absolutely love that episode and I've had amazing feedback from it. So I think anyone listening to this who hasn't checked it out will absolutely love it. So that's what I recommend people check out. The Brian Keane podcast, just search Brian Keane, Luke Tiberski, it'll come up. I highly recommend checking that out.
I'll put the links in the show notes and mate, thank you very much. And yes, we do have to catch up together, have a coffee, go for a run and have a few laughs. Brian, thank you very much. And I want to say thank you to all the listeners of the Luke's Laydown podcast. Remember, like, share, tell your mum that it's out now. Luke Tiberski chatting with Brian Keane. Thanks, mate.
Thank you so much again.